Now we're holding up static bays, omid bays, 10 lines from the bottom. We're in the middle of talking about the matter of smicha, that when you bring certain korbanos, as we said, most korbanos yachid and two korbanos sivur, then there has to be smicha, there has to be that the person leans his hands on the animal, as we're going to learn later on, the whole kosei with his full strength. So we've been talking about the dinim of which types of korbanos require smicha. We focused yesterday on the korbanos sibur, which two, machlokas or machlokas Yehuda and Reb Shimon. As far as symbolism behind smicha, there's a number of different interesting explanations. The Rechaim HaKadosh makes a point that many times a person is bringing a korban because of an aveda that he did. We talked yesterday about korbanos sibur that are brought for various aveiras. We talked about the many korbanos yochid, not all of them. Shlomim, for example, is not brought for an aveda per se, but still a chattas and an osham, for example, are among the ones that need smicha, and they are. So this idea the person has brought churches atroma into the world, and therefore by doing smicha on the animal, like he's removing those churches atroma. There's a word from Rav Nachman Breslover on it that he explains basically that people have not just an imagination, but also a seichel, whereas animals only have an imagination, and he gives a whole explanation of how smicha, in effect, is a person does an aveda a lot of times because of imagination. He imagines that something, he imagines that he'll get something good out of it when not, so therefore now he's transferring that, he's saying now I'm leaning on the animal, which is something that has only imagination, and therefore thereby I'm transferring that to it, and I'm confessing my aveda and freeing myself of that. And Rav Shamshon of Hirsch has it on him, his Pirush on Vayikra has a long, interesting explanation. The gist of it, he says, is that the person who's doing smicha, in a way, is doing it as a representative of the whole Jewish people, which is why we're going to learn further on. It's not a goy, not women, because they don't serve so much as representatives of the people. They're more private individuals, etc., etc. And then the idea being that they're coming and doing it as if on behalf of everybody else. We're going to talk about soon about a case of a korban that's shared by Shukfim, and we're going to talk about whether smicha is done on it and by who. So here it's a similar idea. It belongs to a yochid, but he's doing it as a representative, so to speak, of the tzibur. Okay. So the Mishnah said kol korban, and he explains, we said in the Mishnah, we're going to explain now, that b'chor, ma'aser, and pesach are excluded, and basically he says because also the idea is the smicha represents a person's ability to act, or having acted or having not acted, as the case may be, in the case of why he's bringing the korban, as opposed to before Meister and Pesach are not so much about a person's actions, but he explains elsewhere they have more to do with the fact that a person owns property. Yeah, he owns animals, and therefore he has to be makdish. The before and the Meister, and then Pesach also has more to do with that kind of thing. Okay, so the Gemara says Tanan Rabbanan. There were three times in the psukim where it says the word korbanot. Rashi Ksavyat explains that we mean specifically when we're talking about the smicha of a shlomim. Three times in the psukim it says there the word korbanot. Regular Rashi explains rather that there are actually six times where it says korbanot, the word korbanot, but three of them are used for other drushes, so we're dealing with the other three over here. So we learn from that. Korbanot v'lo ha'bechor. The first one tells us that the word korbanot means that you don't do smicha on a bechor. How does the word korbanot come to mean not a bechor? So there's different possibilities. It can mean that korbanot implies a korban which now he himself obligated himself to bring, as opposed to a bechor is already kodesh to begin with. It can mean that. So the horus kodesh me'elov, that's the kedushim amichos, and Rashba explains it that way. Rashi Ksavyad explains the word korbono implies that it's meant to be meratzah, to make acceptable, and to bring a shem to a gift as a gift. The one who brings it, b'chor ma'aser and pesach, are not coming for kapara. There are different kind of obligation and a couple of different ways of looking at how the word korbono comes to mean not certain kinds of korbanos. So korbono v'leya b'chor. So it means the first one tells us not a b'chor. Now, why would we need to be told that? Otherwise, you would have faked him thought to make a kavachomer. Or ma shlomim shen kedushas and ma bech shlomim, which are not
kodesh from the womb. It's when later on the animal is born, or the normal cholin animal. Later on, at some point, you decide to be makdish it, tunin smicha, and yet it requires smicha, and we know that because the Torah does mention it explicitly. B'chor shekdushasim erechem. So you could argue that a b'chor where the kedusha is from the womb, therefore it has in a certain sense a stronger kind of kedusha. Ain't a din shetones that much more so that it should require smicha. Tamad lema korbanim v'lema b'chor. Therefore, the Torah tells us with korbanim to exclude a b'chor. The next korbana is korbana v'lei maisi. Maisi behemah doesn't require smicha either. Why do we need that? Sheyochol v'alei din. Well, again, the reason we need to be told that is we would have thought to make a kavachoyer. Umash shlomim shein mekadshim b'fneim al achreim. A shlomim is not mekadish. Now, as far as maisi behemah, we touched on yesterday the point, which we'll learn about in more detail in the Masechta Beforis, Ves Hashem, at the end, that when you're counting the animals for Maaser, the tenth one, of course, is Kodesh, Asiri Yah Kodesh. But you have a Din, which we're going to learn over there, that also it's possible for the ninth or the 11th one to be Kodesh. We touched on yesterday the case where he miscounts and counts what's really the tenth as the ninth, and then counts the 11th as the tenth. Then the 11th has a degree of Kedusha, and you have to bring it as a Shlomim. The ninth one also, if you miscounted the ninth one as tenth, it also has a degree of kedusha, and you don't bring it as a korban, but the din is you have to wait until it develops a mum, and only then you can eat it as if it was a b'chor or the maaser itself. So now shlomim doesn't have that feature. With a shlomim, there's no such thing as makadish the animal before it or after it. Tonin smicha, and yet shlomim requires smicha. So the Maisa, which is Makadish, what comes before it and what comes after it, because again, the ninth or the eleventh animal is able to become Kaddish under certain circumstances. Ain't a dinja tone smicha. How much more so you could argue that it requires smicha. Tamadlema korbonai v'loi Maisa, therefore the pasuk is korbonai, implying but not Maisa behema does not require smicha. The third korbanah teaches us for like Pesach. Not the korban Pesach does not require smicha. Now, why we need a limud for that? Sheyochol v'alei dinu. Otherwise, you would think to make a kavachomer. Or mash shlomim she'ene ba'amod v'havei. Because after all, a shlomim, you don't have a specific mitzvah. Go get up and bring this korban. You want to bring a shlomim, you could, but there's no specific obligation most of the time to bring a shlomim. Yeah, okay, when it comes to the Shamar Chagiga of Yom Tov, you have a chiyuv of that. But generally speaking, a shlomim is a voluntary korban, to'unin smicha, and yet they require smicha. Now, you can't say that with Bechor and Maaser, of course, because Bechor and Maaser are equally much a chiyuv as a Pesach. Anyway, Pesach Shubah Moed V'Havei. So then the Korban Pesach, where you do have a mitzvah to bring it, regardless, ain't a din. Shetoron smicha, how much more so you would think that it should require smicha. Tamad lema korbanei, for like Pesach, therefore the Torah says korbanei, to tell us to exclude the Korban Pesach. Okay. So the Gemara says, fine. So we have three limudim to say that there are types of korbanos that are potter from smicha. The question, though, is ikla mifrach. We could slug all that up. Malah shlomim shekane to a nisachim with knufas chaz v'shoy. After all, the shlomim, as we've learned before, require nisachim, the flour and oil and wine that go along with them, and they also require the chaz v'shoy to be waved. So you could say because of that, they also need smicha. Bechor, Maisa, and Pesach, as we learned before, there's no nisachim and there's no knufas chaz v'shoy. Tosfos points out, okay, neither does a chatas or an oshim. But you could say, though, on the other hand, at least the chatas and osham have more applications of blood than the mizbeach. The chatas has four, the osham has shtei matanas shtei nava. The three that we're talking about over here, b'chor, ma'aser, and pesach, in addition, only have one application of blood to the mizbeach. With daman tor matana afas or vavad shi'it and kevina yisoid, like we say in ezer mekayman. So therefore, you could argue that maybe so that would be anyway reason to say that they shouldn't require smicha. So why are we so why do we need a miut for each one of them in the pasuk? So the answer is you're right. Kroy asmachta ba'alma. In fact, the psukim are only an asmachta. The real reason why they don't require smicha is because of that, because we can make that kavachoyner. We can say that we can say that even if we were to make any of these kavachoymers, we would slog up and say that a shlomim requires nesachim and tinufas chaz v'shoy. None of these do, therefore they shouldn't require smicha either. Well, okay, the Gemara asks Ela Kroy Lomodi. Okay, well then why do we need the psukim? So what are we doing with the three times that it says korbanon? So the answer is we learn from them something else. Korbanon v'le korban chaver, right? One of them teaches us you do smicha on your own korban, but you can't do smicha on somebody else's korban, as we're going to talk about in more on Amud Beis, you can't appoint a shliach for it. The second one teaches us korban over like korban over kachavim, that you do smicha on the korban of a yid, but not the korban of a goy. Now Tosfos points out earlier in the Masechta that look, you know, if we already said that you can't do for somebody else, then you certainly can. Then a goy is certainly somebody else. Why do we need an extra pasuk for that? In fact, the Gemara is going to mention a little further along that Rabbi Yehuda actually disagrees and says you can douche in both of them. One possibility is he says you can douche in them both from the same pasuk, from the same miut. But other than that, Tosfos says, you might have thought, listen, you know, you can't do smicha for another yid's korban, because after all, let the guy himself come and do smicha. But a goy who's not shayach to smicha at all, he can't even come into the Azari, he can't go past the chayil, you would have thought, maybe you should, maybe in fact, he should, maybe in fact he should, since he can't do smicha at all, maybe you should do it for him, and therefore we need a separate pasuk to tell us that. And the third one, korban ilaramis kobale korban l'smicha, that comes to include that if many people together own a korban, then all of them have to do smicha. Each one of them has to do smicha because for each one it's korban noi, he has to do the smicha on the korban. They can't just delegate one guy to do it on behalf of all of them. So that's really what we're using the word korbanai for, these three words, korbanai, and the fact that we said before to exclude b'chor ma'aser and Pesach is more in the nature of an asmachta. Next, the Gemara says, next, Mishnah had said, ha-yurish soydach. We said that the Mishnah had said, a yurish, a person who yarshims a korban from his father, has a number of dinim of the korban that apply to him. He does do smicha, as if it was his own father. He brings nesachim for the korban, just as his father would, if it's an oil or shlomim, or whichever, if it's an oilah or shlomim, we've learned before that only an oilah, shlomim, a torah, which is a type of shlomim, as well as the korbanos of the mitzvah, require nesachim. So the yurish brings but the mitzvah, it's not really relevant. The father, if the father's dead, then there's nothing to take away. So you don't need to take away saras anymore. But we're talking about the other ones. So a yurish will do those. And also the Mishnah said a yurish is able to make a tmura. Now we're going to learn in the sefer tmura next year. That's the shame that for example you can't do tmura with somebody else's korban. If you own a korban and I go over and say I want to exchange this animal for this one, nothing happens. There's no isser in that. The new animal doesn't become kaddish. There's no malchus, etc. On the other hand, here we're saying that a yodish could. Well, the Gemara says, Tani Rab Chananya Kamei Rava. Rab Chananya taught a braisa in front of Rava that says, Yodish Eine Semich, Yodish Eine Meimer. That no, a Yodish does not do smicha on his father's korban, and a Yodish is not able to make a tmura of the korban. So Rava says, wait, Vahanam Tanan, a Yodish Semich, maybe it's Nesacha Vomeimer. We said in the Mishnah that a Yodish does do smicha and brings in a Sachim and does tmura. So it seems there's something wrong with your braisa. Omalei, so Rav Chananya asks, if Kai, should I flip around the Braisa? Should I change the wording of my Braisa and say, we know all over Shas, we have Chachamim who specialized in memorizing Braisas, and then they would repeat them over in the Beis Medrash for discussion. So sometimes, as we find over here, sometimes they would be told there's something wrong with your Braisa, and you have to change the wording with the next time you tell over. So Rav Chananya says, should I be doing that? Rava says, Loi, no, you don't have to flip around the girsa of the braisa. Rather, you should know, you should realize that this braisa that you're quoting, Loi Tzricha, Goy Sabach says, you don't need to, Masnisamani Rav Yehuda. You should know that this braisa is appointed of Yehuda. The Tanya, as we learn in another braisa, Yodish Selmach Yodish Memer, a Yodish could do smicha and can make a tmura, which is what our Mishnah says. Rabbi Yehuda, I mean, Yodish ain't a Meimer, Yodish ain't a Semach, Yodish ain't a Meimer. But Rabbi Yehuda says that no. So therefore, so your Braisa is going according to Rabbi Yehuda, whereas our Mishnah goes according to the Meimer. The Gemara says, my time is Rabbi Yehuda. Why does Rabbi Yehuda hold that a Yodish cannot do Smicha and can't cause a Tumura? So the answer is because he learned, again, when the pasuk says korbanai, he says korbanai, his korban implies, well, like korban ogre, not his father's korban. So, and that's talking about smicha, the samach yodeh, arosh korbanai, so therefore, so he says that it means specifically his korban, not one that he yaushim from his father. Now, so that takes care of smichas. What about, why does he say not Torah? The yalef, tchilas hekdesh misof hekdesh. He derives what happens at the beginning of hekdesh from what happens at the end of hekdesh. Meaning, for this purpose, we're calling Torah the beginning of hekdesh, in the sense, how does this new animal get kedusha? When you say, I'm making a Torah, I'm exchanging this animal for this one, now immediately the new one gets it, now immediately the one gets the new one gets kedusha. And the end of Hektish would be called when you do the smicha, because the smicha is the last thing you do before the animal is shafted, because as the Gemara is going to say further on, the take of the, as the Mishnah is going to say later on, take of the smicha shchita, you're supposed to do the shchita as soon as possible after the smicha. So therefore, so now Rabbi Yehuda learns one from the other. Once the pasuk is giving us a mute that the Yodish doesn't do smicha because it's korban noi, then therefore that means we can also derive the end of hektish the smicha from the we can derive the beginning of hektish the tmura from the end of it. Ma soif hektish Yodish enesem. So just like when it comes to the end right before the shchita, the Yodish does not do smicha because of the word korban noi. After the hektish Yodish enesem, the same way at the beginning, the Yodish is not able to make a tmura. Tosfos points out there's a different Gemara that considers Tmura Soif Hektish, because it's not the first stage. After all, you had to have an original animal for a korban before you make a Tmura. But here, relative to the Shchita, we can call it Tchilas Hektish, relative to the Smicha, and the Shchita, we can call it Tchilas Hektish, we can call it the beginning. Tosfos points out there are, in fact, Geosaurus that have it the other way around as well, and call the Smicha Tchilas Hektish, and the Tmura Soif Hektish. Whatever the case, the point is Rabbi Yehuda is learning one from the other. Well, what about the Chachamim who disagree with Rabbi Yehuda? So they say, on the contrary, Chomer Yomer, L'Rabbis is a Yodish. They say when the Pasuk describes that a person is not allowed to make a Tmura, but if he does, then both of them become Kardish, and the Torah uses the double expression of Chomer Yomer. So the Chum said, L'Rabbis is a Yodish, that comes to include that also not only the person himself who designated the Korban, but also the one who Yarshin the Korban from him is able to make a Tmura. And the Chachamim say, on the contrary, the Yalef Soif Hektish Mitchilas Hektish. And then on the contrary, we're going to learn the end of Hektish from the beginning of it. Meaning, we're going to learn that once we see that the Yodish is able to make a Tmura based on that Pasuk, then we can derive the Smicha, which is Soif Hektish, from that. Ma Tchilas Hektish Yodish Meimer, just like with the beginning of making this Korban half Dusha, the Yodish is able to make a Tmura. Af Soif Hektish Yodish Soimach, the same way at the end of Hektish, the Yodish is able to do Smichach. So they learn exactly the opposite. Rabbi Yehuda has a miut in the pasuk where he says there's no smicha, and then according to him, once there's no smicha, there's no tmura. According to the Chum, it's the other way around. We have a pasuk that says that there is tmura, and once there's tmura, then there's smicha. All right, the Gemara asks, Rabbanon hai korbanon hai happy, right? Well, what are the Rabbanon doing with the word korbanon, from which Rabbi Yehuda is learning that the Yodish does not do smicha? The Chum who disagree, what are they doing with that word korbanai? So the answer is, like we said before, korbanai v'lai korban over to kechadim, korban kechadim, korbanai v'lai korban chaveri, korbanai, the rabbis v'bali korban l'smicha. That it teaches us that you have the three miyotim, as we said before, that you don't do smicha on the korban of a goy, or on the korban of a fellow yid, or that if you have a bunch of people who own a korban together, then they all have to do smicha on it. Rabbi Yehuda, what does Rabbi Yehuda answer to that? So the answer is, L'rabbis tobali korban l'smicha lesher. One answer is, he doesn't hold that when you have that all the owners of a korban have to do smicha on it, he doesn't hold of that concept. Now, does that mean that he holds that? One should do smicha on behalf of all of them? So Rashi Ksaviad says yes. He doesn't hold there's no smicha at all. He just says that one of them, in fact, can do smicha on behalf of all the other ones. Tosfos discusses over here that in the Masechta Tmura, where the Gemara also brings this point, then Rashi explains here differently that it means there's no smicha at all. That when there's a korban over there, when there's a korban belonging to partners, then Rashi explains over there that in fact there's no smicha at all. Tosfos points out that the wording of our Gemara, the wording of the Gemara there in Tmura fits better with that explanation that Rabbi Yehuda would hold. Not only that all of them don't have to do smicha, but rather that there's no smicha at all. Shetim Kubetzis also discusses and brings from the Rosh that the vote is. Okay. So you have two different explanations. So Rashi over here is explaining that it means that one does smicha for all of them. In Tmura, Rashi explains it means that they don't, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it doesn't need smicha at all. Shetim Kubetzis explains, brings from the Rosh, that according to Rashi, what it means is, or Gemara means that, that when it says that, when the Gemara uses the expression, he just means that Rabbi Yehuda holds, doesn't hold that all of them have to do the smicha and the korban, but he does hold that one of them has to. So he has one extra korbanah left because he doesn't learn that din, and therefore he has that korbanah available to teach us that a yodish doesn't do smicha, and once he doesn't do smicha, then as we said before, he doesn't do tumura either. Another way you can understand, the Gemara says, V'inami yisrei, or even if you want to say that Rabbi Yehuda does hold, then as far as a korban of partners, that maybe he does hold like the Chachamim, that all of them have to do smicha on it, fine. You could say, mechad kronafta. You could argue that to learn that you don't do smicha on a goy's korban, or that you don't do smicha on a fellow yid's korban, you learn from the same pasuk. Because it's fine. What we're saying is, not specifically Jew versus goy, we're saying that you don't do that a shliach doesn't do smicha, as we're going to talk about on Amud Beis. And once you say shliach doesn't do smicha, then automatically that includes whether it's a yid, whether it's a fellow yid's korban, or whether it's a goy's korban. A regular Rashi puts it a different way. Either way, it's not your korban. It puts it in different OCS. Either way, it's not your korban. So he could say that you don't need two separate psukim, one for a goy's korban and one for a fellow yid's korban. It's enough to have one pasuk for there. So yatrulei trei proi. So in fact, then in that case, he has two. So in fact, he has two extra korbanos available. Chad korbanos like korban aviv. So one of them will teach us that only when it's his korban, but not when it's a korban that belonged to his father. Which is fine. I mean, his father is also somebody else, but you could argue that maybe since he yaushin it, it's now considered fully his. And the other one would be like the Chachamim say to teach us that all the people who share in a korban all have to do smicha on it. All right. So then, according to the Chachamim, you don't have a korbanoi available for that purpose. According to Rabbi Yehuda, you do. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda davishes that korbanoi is one of the korbanois teaches us. And a Yorish doesn't do smicha. Okay, now Rabbi Yehuda, on the other hand, we said, the Chum had learned, because it says Homer Yomir, then it means that a Yorish can also make a Tzmura, and once he can make a Tzmura, he can do smicha. So Rabbi Yehuda, hi, Homer Yomir, my Ovidlai. What is Rabbi Yehuda doing with the words Homer Yomir? And the answer is Rabbi Yehuda would say that we need that in order to include that a woman can make a Tzmura as well. And would also get malchus for it, just like a man would. And why do we need that? To Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, Lafisha, Kola Inin, Kola Inin, Medaba, Elabalot, and Zocha. Because the whole section about Tmura is talking in the masculine form. Lo Yachli Fenuva, Lo Yomir Oisai, So Masse Feinu the Rabbis as Isha. How do we know to also include a woman that she's also capable of making a Tmura? Tamadlema Homer Yomir, therefore the Pasuk says Homer Yomir to include her as well. Tosfos points out that in general the Torah is usually phrased in the masculine, so there's no reason to say, why would we say over here any more than we would anywhere else, that we would think it wouldn't apply to women. Tosfos explains, the Gemara actually explains in Tmura, that the vote is like this, because when it comes to Tmura, as the Gemara explains over there, there are certain cases where Tmura is impossible and there's no punishment for it. In particular, a korban that belongs to the tzibur, it's impossible to make a Tmura of. A korban that belongs to partners, even though we were just talking about whether smicha to be done on it, but the Tmura definitely can't be done with it. The Gemara establishes over there. So now you would think that also. So you see that there were certain cases. Now they're still not allowed to make a Tmura. The Tzibur is not allowed to take an animal that belongs to the Korban for a Korban Tzibur and say we're going to swap it out for another animal. Nevertheless, if they do, there's no punishment because it's not affected. So therefore, the Gemara explains over there. You would have thought the same thing is true as far as a woman, and therefore we need to be told that the words Homer Yomer. Tosfos has some other questions in it as well. Okay, so the point is that therefore, so we need a limud that here we're saying that we just said that there are various cases where various people who don't do smicha, and we're going to say soon that a woman is not obligated to do smicha. So then in that case, maybe automatically because of that, they shouldn't be able to make a tmura, because we just said before by a yodish that the two things are tied together. Tosfos says no, by a yodish they're tied together, but not necessarily otherwise. So it's possible that a person who could not do smicha, such as a goy, or not required to, such as a woman, and still can make it tomorrow. So we learn that from the word homer yomer, says Rabbi Yehuda. Therefore he doesn't have the word homer yomer available to teach us what the Chachamim say that a yodish can make it tomorrow. The Rabbanon, so what are the Rabbanon answers to that? They say gaushim v'im. So fine, they're not really gaushening from the word homer yomer, they're gaushening from the vav of the word v'im. The Rabbi Yehuda, v'im lo yodish, where's Rabbi Yehuda? Does not doushin that vav of v'im. So therefore he says you don't have that derasha available. Therefore he has to learn from homer yomer, and everything develops from there. Tosfos discussed earlier in the Masechta, refers to over here where they discussed earlier in the Masechta that sometimes Rabbi Yehuda does doushin vavs and sometimes not. So the Gemara doesn't mean here he doesn't doushin the vav at all, but rather he doesn't doushin it for this. He uses it for some other derasha. So that's that then. So at the end of the day, you have what the Mishnah had said that a Yodish does do smicha and can make a tmura and so forth. And Rabbi Yehuda disagreed. And Rabbi Yehuda disagreed and said that he doesn't. Usually we have, when we have a machlokas of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, and usually the Baal machlokas of Rabbi Yehuda is in fact Rabbi Meir, so then usually the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, but here we have a Stam Mishnah, that doesn't even mention Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, then the Rambam passed things like that the Yodish is able to do all those things. He does do smicha, he does do bring the sachin, and he can make a tmura of his father's garment. Okay. Now let's talk about which type of people are required to do smicha. A kol sempchin, everybody who brings a korban does smicha, chutz mecheresh shoyt v'katan, with the exception of a cheresh shoyt v'katan, and all of them will learn in the Gemara Weinhat, the summa, a blind person, v'ov kechavim, a goy, v'eved, an eved who brings a korban, an eved knani, who basically has the same dinim as a woman, v'ashliach, and a shliach of somebody else, because like we said before, you have to do the smicha yourself, v'isha, and a woman. All as we'll explain in the Gemara why. The mission continues, O smicha shiore mitzvah. Now the smicha is really the leftovers of the mitzvah, meaning if you didn't do the smicha, you're still yotze bringing the korban. Nevertheless, as the Gemara says earlier in the Masechta, and then we're going to talk about later on, it's still in a way, it's though you didn't do the kapara. The Torah wants you to do the Torah. We're going to learn on Omer Beis, but the Torah considers it in a certain sense as if you didn't do the kapara, even though in fact you did. Again, given the various symbolisms that we said before about what smicha represents, the point is you do want to have that as an important part of your korban, but if you missed it out, then the korban is still kosher. Next, al harosh, the smicha is done on the head of the animal, the beis yadayim, with both hands, over makom shesoymchen shoychten, and in the same place where you do the smicha is where you shecht it. So therefore, if you did the smicha outside the azara, then you're going to have to do it back again inside the azara. The taker for smicha shechita, and as soon and right away after the smicha should be the shechita. The Gemara elsewhere mentions that there were three takifs. This is one of them. Another one the Gemara mentions, the takif from the Tilas Yadayim Bracha, as soon as possible after washing, is when you should say the Bracha HaMotzi, which actually we have an interesting din, a practical din that comes out of that. Here we're saying that the takif of Smicha Shechita. Now, Smicha sometimes might be done by somebody who's standing in Shaar Nikanor. A woman, for example, was saying doesn't have to do smicha, but we're going to talk about that maybe she could. So if she does, then she would be standing in Shaar Nikanor, the eastern gate of the Azara, and doing smicha. Similarly, for example, Mitzorda has korbanos that he has to do smicha on, and until he's finished his kapara, he can't come into the Azara. So he also stands in Shaar Nikanor. On the other hand, the shechita, even though, now we learned in Zvachim, just several different opinions, when we say Kodshe Kodshim have to be shecht in the north of the Azara, what's considered the north for this purpose? Is it only the area directly north of the Mizbeach, or is it also areas north, or is it also areas, northwest and northeast of that? So following the opinions that it's that following the opinions that's only directly due north of the Mizbeach or northeast, it would come out that then if the smicha is done by Sharnik, I know that he'd have to move it a minimum of 22 amas away in order to do the shechita. Therefore, Tosfos elsewhere derives from that that takeif can be considered up to 22 amas of walk, and from that we have a practical halacha that after you've washed the bread, that you should have less than time that it takes to walk 22 amas before you make the bracha hamotzi. Nowadays, it's not always so easy to do that, especially if the sink is in the next room, but basically, you should try to do that, that was within the time that it takes to walk 22 amos. Okay. So the Gemara says, let's go through the list of people in the Mishnah that we said don't do smicha, a potter from smicha, and discuss why that is. Ishlam a chereshoy to the cotton. I understand why chereshoy to the cotton don't do smicha, the lav min day in. Look, they have no das in general, they're potter from mitzvahs in general. So therefore, they don't have to do the mitzvah of smicha. Now, of course, if they don't have das, they're not necessarily bringing a korban of their in the first place. So again, one possibility is they may be a yodish. Again, we said just now that a mayor holds, and this is a halacha, that a yodish does do smicha. So that's one explanation. Another point is also that, for example, you can have a cheder shoyt of a cotton could conceivably be a mitzvah, and their father or their apotropos brings the korbanos on their behalf. So then it's still considered their korbanos, and they would be the ones who have to use smicha. But nevertheless, we're saying they don't because they don't have das. We know that a goy doesn't do smicha, okay, because the pasuk says, when the pasuk introduces smicha, it says dabur of bnei Yisrael, and so we learn from that bnei Yisrael same thing, ve'en ev dekachavim same thing. Only Jews do smicha, goyim do not. And practically speaking, they can't come into the Azorah to do the smicha anyhow. But in addition, the Rashi Shantz, one of the Balei HaTosfos, explains because generally speaking, when you do smicha, you do vidui together with it for kapara, and a goy doesn't get that type of kapara. As we've learned in Zvachim and Or Masechta, a goy can bring certain korbanos, but it's more in the nature of giving a gift to Hashem rather than as kapara. So all those we understand. El suma my time aloy, but why shouldn't, we'll get back to the Eved and the Shliach and the Isha soon, but first, why does El suma my time aloy, why shouldn't a blind person do smicha? So the Gemara says, Rav Chista and Rav Yitzchak Bar Avdimi. Rav Chista and Rav Yitzchak Bar Avdimi argue why that is. Tosfos points out, by the way, that as a historical matter, there seem to have been two different Rav Yitzchak Bar Avdimis among the Amoroyim. We find one in the times of Rebbe, and we find another one over here as a colleague of Rav Chista that they're arguing together. Tosfos discusses that, is that correct, or are there maybe other ways of understanding the relevant Gemaras to say that maybe there was only one, but it seems the weight of evidence seems to be that there were two. So here we're talking about the second. Anyway, Chad Omer asks you smicha smicha mizikne edo. One of them says we learned by Xera Shava on the word smicha from the skenim who do the smicha, as we learned yesterday, that one of the korbanos tzibur that requires smicha, where it says so in the pasuk, that the parallel of the davar shel tzibur, and the pasuk says that the zikne edo, members of the Sanhedrin, do smicha on it. So now members of the Sanhedrin can't be blind. Therefore, a person who does smicha can't be blind either. Tosfos wonders, I mean, and by that logic, you should say that a person wouldn't do smicha if he has any mum. The people of the members of the Sanhedrin can't have any mum. They left the question open. So that's one explanation. But Chadoma, the other, between Rav Chista and Rav Yitzchak Bar Avdimi, says, ask you smicha, smicha me'ulas re'iyah. We do learn a gzeira shava about smicha, but instead we learn from the ulas re'iyah. Which in turn you have, as we're going to talk about on Amud Beis, by an Oilas Re'iyah itself, it doesn't explicitly say Smicha either, but it says by a voluntary Oila, that you do Smicha on it, the Samach Yoda, Arusha Oila, as the Torah tells us, the beginning of Parashas Vayikra, and therefore we end up learning from it to an Oilas Re'iyah, and now we can learn from that to who does the smicha. So the same way as a blind person does not have the mitzvah of re'iyah, because the Gemara explains in Chagiga, the mitzvah of re'iyah is to see Hashem and be seen by Hashem in the Azara. A blind person can't see, therefore he's potter from being seen. So therefore he doesn't bring an olas re'iyah. So the same way, since we're doing Zeta Shava from that, in the same way he's not doing re'iyah, then therefore he doesn't do smicha either. Again, Tosfos was asked that in that case, then, I mean, there were other cases that there were other cases where that are potter from, there are other types of people who are potter from Aliyah the Regal as well. You should ask the same kind of thing that they, you should say the same kind of thing that they themselves, that all of them in that case, that all of them in that case should be potter. Tosfos points out that also, you know, if we're going to be learning from an earlier Gemara is going to talk about on Amud Beis, the exact method of Limud, can we do that? You can't learn something with a hekesh and then learn from it in the Zeta Shava. So we'll talk about that more on Amud Beis. In any case, that's how we learn that a blind person doesn't do smith. Okay, the Gemara says, and so we have two different opinions. One learns from the Zikner Eder by the Pirate Helen Belashal Sibur, and the other one learns from an Erla Sriya. Well, why does each one have to learn the way he does? Well, the Mandra Omam, Erla Sriya, the one who learns from the Erla Sriya, my time of the Yalith, Zikner Eder. Why doesn't he instead learn from the Zikner Eder and learn the Zeta Shava from there? And the answer is because he holds Don in Yochid and Yochid, because we should learn a Korban of a Yochid from another Korban of a Yochid. So learn the dinim of a regular korban, which a voluntary, which an individual brings, from the olas ri'iyah, which also an individual brings. Then don't in yochad b'tzibur, don't learn from the yochad from the tzibur, where the har halam davar is a korban of the tzibur. So therefore, he says there's no reason that you should learn from that. Ulman the yalef mizikne eder, the one who learns from the zikne eder, the fact that the members of Sanhedrin do smicha on the par helam davashot sefer, my time of the yalef ma'ula sriya, why don't they instead learn it from the ula sriya? And the answer is because he says, don in midi dichtib be smicha begufet, midi dichtib be smicha begufet. Because he says, on the other hand, you want to learn something where it says smicha by the korban itself from something where it says by the korban itself. So by the par helam davashot sefer, the Torah clearly states smicha. By Olas Nedava, the Torah explicitly states Smicha. La Puki Olas Ria, as opposed to, he says, don't learn from the Olas Ria. Did he go from Olas Nedava Gomra? Because that itself, how do we know that there's Smicha when you bring your Ola for Ria? You could argue when you're voluntarily bringing an Ola, make sure you have to do Smicha on it. How do we know when you bring your Ola because you're obligated to when you come to this Smicha? On Shabbat Rigolim, how do we know that you have to do Smicha on that? We learn that from the Olas Nedava. The Tony Tana made Rabbi Yitzchak Abba. As in fact, the Tana taught in front of Rabbi Yitzchak Abba, a Braisa, the Pasuk says about the Ola that Aaron brought on the eighth day of the Miluim, the Pasuk says, Vayakar Vasa Ola, Vayasar Kamishva, to last week's parasha. The Pasuk said he offered the Ola, and he did it like the law. So when we mean Kamishva, it means Kamishva to Ola's Nadava, means like the rules of an Ola's Nadava. So now, that was an obligatory ofer. That was the Torah spells out at the beginning of Parashas Shemini, the korbanos that Aaron has to bring, and this ola is one of them. So therefore, so now we can learn the same thing is true of the ola sriya. The living, al ola sriya, shetona sriya, from here we see that even when a person is required to bring an ola, then nevertheless it also requires smicha. So therefore he says well now still the fact is it doesn't say by the ola sriya itself. You need to learn it in that way. Therefore if you're going to learn who does smicha and who doesn't, and if you're going to exclude a blind person, it's true. That learning from the Par Helam Davashal Tzibur requires learning the Yochid from the Tzibur, but at least it has this advantage. It actually says Smicha explicitly over there, whereas by the Ola Sriya it does not. So now, Tosfos points out the question that if we're saying that you can't learn something with a Hekish and then learn from it with a Zera Shava, but here we're saying it's two different things. We're learning the fact that an Ola Sriya requires Smicha from an Ola Sriya. Then we're learning a different point using the Zeta Shava, namely the fact that a blind person doesn't do Smicha. So that kind of thing is valid. If we had had that, we're learning that an Ola Sriya needs Smicha, if we learned it from a Hekesh, with the Ola Sriya, and then we wanted to learn with a Zeta Shava from that to a different type of korban that requires smicha, that you can't do. To say that we can learn from it which type of person can and can't do smicha, that you can do. So that covers so far the first half of the list in our mission of who doesn't do smicha. Next, we said, an Eved Knani, a Shriach, a woman, none of them do smicha. So the Gemara says, turn it up, and we learn. We learn in a Blaisa. How do we know that they're potter? So again, we have the pasuk says smicha by the shlomim, and it uses the word and again three times it says the word yoder. So we learn from that. Yodoy v'lo yad asher. One yodoy teaches us not the hand of his eved. So an eved does not do smicha for a korban that is that belongs to his master. Yodoy v'lo yad shlofoy. Another one teaches us that not the hand of a shliach. Person can't be a shliach for somebody else to do his his smicha. Now the Gemara is going to ask, an eved is also a shliach. Why do we need a separate miyuk for that? We'll see in a second. And the third one, yodoy v'lo yad asher. The third one teaches us that that it can't be his wife's hand. That she doesn't do smicha, not for herself and not for anybody else. I'm going to bring up an interesting point. In general, we can distinguish between mitzvahs with gufoy and mitzvahs that are not with gufoy. Take, for example, putting on tefillin, let's say, is a mitzvah with gufoy. You have a mitzvah that every day there should be tefillin on your arm and on your head. Can you appoint a shliach to do it? Of course not. It's your body. So here, on the face of it, smicha is something that has to be done by you yourself. The samach yodei, why do you even need miyukim to say that a shliach doesn't do it? Acronym talk about that maybe, for example, the Gemara is going to mention soon that there can't be a chatzik. So you would say, therefore, since you could do it, let's say, for example, tefillin, a chatzitza is no good. You can't have a chatzitza between the tefillin and the body. So therefore you can't have a shliach do it either. But here, when the Torah says yodei, as we're going to learn further on in the Gemara, means there can't be a chatzitza, then therefore, so automatically that means that it can't be a shliach. So in other words, it's not so much that we would have thought, it's more the fact, because it says yodei, precisely that tells us that it is in fact a mitzvah with the person's own body, and therefore that you can't delegate to somebody else. That's a way of explaining how we know that you can't have somebody else. Why it should be that you can't have somebody else do it for you. So the Gemara says, "Kol hani lomali." So the Gemara asks, "Well, why do we need a separate meal for each one?" The bottom line is, the Torah should be telling us you have to do smicha yourself. You can't delegate it, and automatically exclude all those three cases. And the answer is smicha. We still need it. Ikos rachmona chab. If the Torah had only written one of them, then you would say have aminis. You would say which one is it being amai? Lamorti eved. It means to exclude an eved. The lab by mitzvahs, because an eved is not responsible. Is in general not somebody who's chayev in mitzvahs. By the way, Rashi Psaviyad also points out, we already said that you don't do smicha on somebody else's korban, so also why do we need a miyut for a shliach? And he points out, because that would be talking about if you do it without his knowledge, here we're talking about that you can't even be doing it with his knowledge. So again, if we only had one miyut, we could say it only excludes an eved, because he's not a bar mitzvah. He's not considered to be subject to mitzvahs. Now, yes, he's chayiv in the same mitzvahs that women are, but still, he's less chayiv in mitzvahs, which is why we say every day in davening, as we learned earlier in morning brachas, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, we say shalai asani oved, because we thank Hashem for giving us the more mitzvahs. So if it only had one, you would say to be mamayat eved. Have a shliach to bar mitzvah, but a shliach, a fellow yid, is fully as obligated in mitzvahs as you are, or shlucha shalom kenoise. And we could argue that we have the usual rule of shlucha shalom kenoise, and therefore that you could delegate a shliach. So therefore, Ema listeners, so you think maybe that he could do smicha for his mishalayach, therefore we say that not. But Yashmin and Hani Tauti, if we only had two, we would say that which ones are those in my fine, I'm evident of shliach. The lack of gufei damia, because after all, either of them are like his gufei. But his wife, who's considered like her own husband's body for various areas of halacha, Ema Tisner, you would think that maybe she should do smicha. Smicha, so therefore we end up needing the third miyut as well to tell us that in fact, to tell us that a woman can't do smicha for her husband. I mean, you also have the point. The Chemdas Daniel points out that, listen, you know, as it is, we said that they themselves are not shayach to the mitzvah, so therefore they can't do it. The same way, in general, you can't appoint a shliach to do something where he's not shayach to the mitzvah itself. So he explains the fact is you're not causing anything to happen through the smicha. You said before, as we said, as the Gemara is going to say soon, it's shiurei mitzvah. It's only what the leftovers of the mitzvah. It's not unlike, for example, let's say for example, writing a get. is writing a get, for example, is something that accomplishes. You now have a written get, which now can be used. Here you have the smicha. It doesn't really cause anything to be filed. So you would think that maybe they could do it, and therefore you need miyotim to tell us that they can. So here we're talking about the woman doing it as a shliach for her husband. The fact is that a woman doesn't do smicha on her own korban, on her own korban either. That we learn from a different limud, actually the fact that it says B'nai Yisrael, the Gemara explains elsewhere that B'nai Yisrael means not B'nai Yisrael, so therefore Jewish women don't do smith. Tosfos also discusses it could be considered a mitzvah sesalazman, shazman groma, because after all you can only shech the korbanos through in the daytime, and we just said before take off a smith or shvita. So Tosfos says that smicha itself can only be done by day, so therefore maybe it should be considered a mitzvah sesa shazman gama, but not necessarily, Tosfos leaves the issue open over here. Elsewhere, Maseres Hashas over here refers to a Tosfos in Kedushin, where there's a whole sugi over there in Kedushin about mitzvah sesa shazman gama, and which mitzvahs women are chayiv and potter in. So Tosfos gives an answer over there that it's not necessarily considered a mitzvah sesher shazman groma, because therefore you would have thought that choice is not so much that it's not a mitzvah sesher shazman groma, but rather that you still need to know that a woman is possible So first, Tosfos discusses how we know that it's possible if women do the korban in the first place, but Tosfos says that still need a miyut. You would have still thought that women are higher than it. In any case, but here we're saying they can't do it on behalf of their husband, but they can't do it for themselves either. The Gemara in Kedushin over there mentions that there is an opinion that they could do the smicha if they want to. Meforshim discuss the question if they're not obligated to do it. How could they potentially do it? Wouldn't that be avoid of a kodshim? And there's a few different ways of looking at it. Maybe they only do a very light smicha, like more of a symbolic one, rather than a real smicha, which is, as we're going to say soon, the full koichei with its full strength. Maybe even they are allowed to, and it's not considered avoid of a kodshim. There's a number of different points about that. Okay. In any case, that's how we learn that the three of our Mishnah, the last three of our Mishnah, the Ed, the Shliach, and the Isha, all can't do Smicha. Okay. Next, the Mishnah had said Smicha Shiorim, that the Smicha is only the leftovers of the mitzvah, meaning, like, so to speak, an unimportant part of the mitzvah, and therefore it's not that active. So the Gemara says Tanan Rabbanan, we learn in a Brai, so how do we know that? The positive is the Samach for Nirtza, he should do Smicha, and the Korban will be accepted for him. So you have to ask, what do you mean? He's Smicha Makaparas. So the nutza was a chaper all of it should be accepted for him to be a kapara for him. But the smicha mechaperas, does the smicha actually accomplish the kapara? Valor and kapara el gadam. The kapara of a korban is accomplished only by sprinkling the blood. As the Torah tells us that the blood is the soul, is the life of the animal, and that's what's mechaper. So rather, the pasuk is telling you, she must solve a smicha, shiore mitzvah. If he treats the smicha like a shiore mitzvah, like a leftover, unimportant part of the mitzvah, and he doesn't bother doing it, the Torah considers it as though he didn't do the kapara. Nevertheless, he did in fact accomplish the kapara. So he accomplished a certain degree of kapara. It's not the full thing, but basically the kapara has been accomplished. And the Gemara points out the Tanya and Gamit Tznufa Kihai Gavan. You have a similar braisa as far as Tznufa, the same kind of thing. This is certain korbanos that have to be waived, as we talk about earlier in our Masechta, and as we're going to talk about in the next Mishnah, about which korbanos require Tznufa and which don't, and then the details of that. So you have a similar kind of thing. The Pasuk says, with Tznufa Lachaber, by the korbanos of the Metzora, it says that he should have one sheep for an Asham, which will be the Tznufa for waving. Lachaper to bring the kapara. And again, the tnufa mechaperas, is it the tnufa that causes the kapara? Valor in kapara el badam. The kapara is really only with the blood of the korban. The same thing. Loy malach comes to tell you, if he treats the tnufa as shiore mitzvah, the leftovers of the leftover unimportant parts of the mitzvah, malo of a kosak, kiru loy kippur, the Torah considers it as though he did not accomplish the kapara, with kippur, and nevertheless he did accomplish the kapara. It's just not mitzvah and amulfer. Tosfos refers over here to a Gemara that we had back in Zvachim that talks about what does that mean Ki'ilu like Kippur of a Kippur. Is there in fact something that maybe is not that maybe is not Mechaper, and nevertheless it is? The Gemara discusses over there that what happens if a person, one reason why a person would bring an Oila is if he failed to do a mitzvah saseh. A person failed to put on tefillin or say Krishna or do any other mitzvah saseh, he might bring an Oila for that. The Gemara discusses over there. What about if he missed out another essay after he designated the korban? Would the one korban cover it, or would he have to bring a separate korban for it? And the Gemara mentions this point over here that maybe Kippur, like Kippur, maybe it means he wasn't mechaper anything that did maybe he wouldn't be mechaper for the fact itself that he missed out the smicha precisely because that's after that for Russia. And the Gemara explains over there that's not what it says. So with both of them, smicha and tinucha, you should do them. But if you didn't, the evidence you yotze, but still didn't do the mitzvah in the best possible way. Next, we said in the Mishnah al harosh, the smicha is done specifically on the head of the animal. So the Moses Tanan Abanon, how do we know that? We learn in a Braisa. When it says Yodai, it says his hand should be Al HaRosh. The Pasuk is the Samach Yodai Al Rosh HaOila. So we learn from that. Yodai Al HaRosh, his hand has to be on the head of the animal. V'lo Yodai Al HaSavar, so his hand can't be on the neck of the animal. Yodai Al HaRosh, v'lo Yodai Al HaGabayim, it can't be on the back of the animal. Yodai Al HaRosh, v'lo Yodai Al HaChoza, and his hand has to be on the head and not on the chest of the animal. So in other words, there are different times where it says Yeroshoi, and each one of them we learn a different one. So it must have Kalahani Lomali. Again, why do we need all those miotim? The Torah is telling you it has to be on the head, that's that. And the answer is we still need all of them. Because Rahman of God, if the Torah only said one of them, you would say the Mu'uti Tsavar, you would say, you know why? You're gonna be mimic without the neck, the like Koi Bahabi Yeroshoi. Because after all, the neck is not on the same level as the head. The head is held up higher. Is held up higher than the neck. Tosfos points out, by the way, that the tsavar over here would actually be me, not the back of the neck so much, but the front of the neck, the area where the simonim are, and the area where the animal is shechted. We will learn in the Sefer Chulin, in the next couple of weeks, Bez Hashem, we'll learn about the exact area of the neck where the shechta is supposed to be done. It's supposed to be the front of the neck. That's where the windpipe and the esophagus are located. You can't cut through the back of the neck first. In fact, if you do, as we'll learn there, it's a possible shaitik. Anyway, so over here, so we're saying it has to be on the head, not on the front of the neck, not on the back, and not on the chest of the animal. So if the Torah only told us one of them, you would say, L'mu'utit Sabra, it comes to exclude the neck. Though the front of the neck, like Koi Bahadi Roshay, it's not the same level as the head. Abu Gabri, but back of the animal, the Koi Lahabi Roshay, after all, it's basically the same height as the head. Or the Gabri, Lahabi Roshay, can also mean on the same side. The front of the neck is not on the same side as the top of the head. The back of the animal is on the same side of the animal as the top of the head. So therefore, you would say, Amaloy, maybe not. Maybe there's no problem doing smicha there. Smicha, so therefore, we need another miut in the Torah to tell us that you can't do it on the back either. Malbin points out, after all, al roshay, sometimes the word al can mean new, so maybe the back is good enough, because near the head, no. So tzricha, so therefore you need to be said not the back either. V'yashmin hanitre, if you only told those two, you would say, you know why Mishum delay srab le tnufa? Because after all, you don't have a special mitzvah with those body parts to do tnufa with them. But the chaza, the chest of the animal, which you do have, you do tnufa with it. You do have the chaza of a shoik of the shlomim where you do tnufa with it. Emaloi, maybe not. Maybe you could also do smicha on it. Smicha, so therefore you need to also be told that you can't do smicha there. Okay. The Gemara asks, so now we've said you have to do it on the head. You can't do it on the neck, the back, or the chest. What about Iboilot Alex Dodin Mao? What about if a person does the smicha on the sides? Let's say on the sides of it, instead of doing it on the top of the head, let's say he does it on the sides of the head. Rashi and Rashi Ksaviyad explain that it means, let's say, on the cheeks of the animal. Would that be good? It is on the head, after all. Toshma, we can learn proof. Tanya Abba Bira Berebi, Abba Bira, Tanya Abba Bira Berebelezim and Yaakov, Abba Bira Berebi Elezim and Yaakov, Berebi can mean the son of, but the Barashi Ksaviyad explains that he's a Talmud. Anyway, he explains, he says, no, when it says Yodei Arosha, the Lord Yodei Alef Dodin has to be specifically on the top of the head, not on the sides, so not on the cheeks of the animal. Okay. mattress smells chocolate. If there was a cloth in the between the hand and the chocolate animal, would that be a chafitza? And the Gemara says, Toshman, you're another Brisa says, over Vadfle, Te double photos, Bain Levain Azeva, as long as there's nothing making a chafitza between him and the korban, so there's your answer, you can't have chafitza. And as we said before, once you can't have chafitza, automatically that alone establishes that it means it's a mitzvah of gufoy, similar to tefillin, similar to sukkah, similar to other such mitzvahs, and therefore it follows everything that we said before about not being able to delegate it to a shliach of any kind. Okay. The Mishnah said it was shtei yadayim, the smicha has to be done with both hands. Menon immediately, where do we know that from? Because the pasuk says by the korbanos of Yom Kippur, the samach Aaron is shtei yodav. The pasuk says that Aaron should lean both of his hands. Now the word shtei it says whatever, it says yodav, but ksiv yodav uktiv shtei. On the one hand it says yodav and it even says it without the yod, which can be read as if it said yodav his hand in the singular. But then you also have uktiv shtei, but it says two hands. So why does the Torah need to do that? Let the Torah just say straight out, yodav, yod dalet, yod vav, rather than having to spell which means two hands, and then you don't need the word shtei. So therefore, zeb bona av, kol mokum, shenema yodai harei kan shtein. This gives us a binyan av, that whenever the Torah tells us his hand, then automatically it really means both of them, ad shi yifut l'cha kosum achas, unless the Torah specifies to you one hand. So that's what we say over here. Therefore, that means so even though the pasuk does say yodai, for example, by the beginning of Parshas Vayikra, the samach yodai al rosh ha'olam. So you would think it means only one hand, but no. Based on this pasuk, shtei yodav, and the word yodav is written without the yod, as though it could be read yodai. So that tells us that yodai actually means both of them. The Gemara says, "Also, Rabbi Lozer, Amr of a Hashmait of Bevei Medrash." Rabbi Lozer went and told over the statement in the base Medrash. Like Amr Mishmeder, Shlokish, he did not say it over in the name of Rish Lakish. From Rish Lakish, the Ikpad. So Rish Lakish heard about that and was upset about that. That Rabbi Lozer had not said it. That had not said it to Shmoy. Rish Lakish himself, actually, it wasn't even Rish Lakish's own drasha. It was actually a brisa that he was quoting. Nevertheless, Rish Lakish held that Rabbi Lozer should have said it b'shem Oimrei. Why indeed didn't Rabbi Lozer say it over b'shem Oimrei? So you could say that maybe in fact the Sfasemis points out that he maybe in fact he hit on this drasha independent. Nevertheless, though, Rish Lakish was still upset that he still, found out that Rish Lakish had doused him in this way as well. So Rish Lakish says to Rabbi Lozer, be sapadak. So you're going to tell me then that instead of telling him straight out, you shouldn't have done that. Instead, he points out to him that the drasha itself seems to be flawed. So in other words, basically, if you're going to come up with it as your own independent drasha, then we can slug it off. If you're going to say we're quoting it from Torah Sfarim and Rish Lakish had already quoted it like that, then fine, you should have done it that way. If you're going to come up with it as your own independent drasha, then you should have realize that there's a flaw in it, because the Lomali the Mithra, Yodav, Yodav, then why do we have many times in the Torah where it does in fact say the words Yodav in the plural? Actually, Esrim Ba'arba Yodav, in fact, he asked him that there are 24 places in the Torah where it says Yodav, or one of them being in connection with the Shlomim, and here are a few of them in connection with the Shlomim. Yodav to Vienna, his hands should bring, which is where we have the concept of the Tnufa, of the Chaz of the Shroik, of a Shlomim. And it says Yodav, and there it means his hand. So in other words, if every time Yodav by itself means two hands, then it doesn't need to say Yodav in such cases. Another example. So that's one example. As Sfasemis points out, there actually could have been maybe a way of slugging that up, but fine. So therefore, maybe that's why the Shlokish brings a bunch of different proofs. Another one, for example, in the bracha of Moshe, the Shevet Yehuda, Yodav Rav Loi, his hands in plural should be strong for him and should be able to help him defeat his enemies. The Gemara actually it was in Ed Soita in Dafa Yomi for Soita. During Sfira, a couple of days ago, this also came up in a different context. The Gemara mentioned that Moshe Rabbeinu was davening for Yehuda, that he should be readmitted in Yeshiva Shamayla, and he should be able to discuss. He should be able to be engaged in the discussions in Torah with the neshamas of the other tzaddikim and chachamim who are there. Anyway, there also it says Yod Dov with the Yod, and it means two of them. Another example, Sikolos Yodov, by when Yaakov was given the Baraka from Menashe and Ephraim, he switched his hands and put his right hand on Ephraim and his left hand on Menashe, even though they were positioned the other way around. So if you're telling me that any time it says Yod Dov, it already means two because of the, because it says in the one place, Binyan Av, it says Shtei Yodov, then it wouldn't have needed to say Yodov with the Yod in all these places. How exactly you get 24 times that it says Yodov is a question in itself. The actual word Yodov itself doesn't appear in Chumash that many times. So one explanation. So there's a couple of different ways of arriving at the number 24. It's possible sometimes the Gemara does use 24 to just mean a large number, so it could be that. But in any case, So there's an explanation. Nimukei Agriv in the back of the Gemara explains he doesn't mean 24 times it says Yodav. He's referring rather to a pasuk in Shmuel and in Divrei Yamim that mentions a giant that David and his men fought that had 24, they had total 24 fingers and toes, and they were the part Esbois Yodav Esbois Raglav were 24. He had six fingers on each hand and six toes on each foot, and therefore it says Yod and says Yodav in the plural over there. And there were different other explanations. It doesn't just mean the word Yodav, it means any conjugation of it. Yodei, Yodai, Yodeho, etc. Any counts. You have 12 times it says Yodav, 4 times where it says Yodei, 3 times where it says Yodeho, 2 times where it says Yodai, and that makes a total of 24. And then the Sfas Emes' son, Rav Moshe Betzalel, has a note. Another way of looking at it is that it's the number of times that it says Yodov and Yodei Hem. So not all the different conjugations that Malbim says, but rather all the times that it says Yodov or Yodei Hem, which also amounts to 24. In any case, the point is we have many different examples where the Torah does spell out Yodai Yim in the plural with the extra Yod, even though according to Yod Jerusha, you didn't have to do that. Well, because his Ishtik Rav Elazar was quiet and didn't have an answer for that. Levosa did not die. The day after his shlokish, he calmed down and then felt better. On the way, he said to Rav Elazar, you know what? You could have actually found a way to answer me. My time, like Tamali, why didn't you answer me? That's the Torah. It doesn't mean every single time that it says Yodav means automatically Yodav, but only Yodav de Smicha Tamim. That it means only specifically the times when it mentions Yodav when it comes to Smicha. So you have the one time over here. And the one time over here, by the Torah of Yom Kippur, where it says Shtei Yodav without the Yod, without the second Yod, and all the other places where it talks about Smicha, it says Yodav. So Rav Elazar should have been able to answer that to the Shlokh. And that's what Sfas Emes points out. In other words, that Rish Lakish is saying that look, your drasha was obviously missing something. You would have needed you would have needed to realize that it's talking only about smicha, and therefore then you should have quoted it in my name. The Gemara asks the smicha nami ksiv by Yisnechas Yodav Olavaitzaveinu. You find by the smicha of Moshe that Moshe gave to Yeshua to appoint him as his successor, where it also says the word Yodav and it spells it out with the two yods. By your logic, but it was just said with one word. Rashi, by the way, mentions that it means, even though actually Hashem had only told Moshe, the Samachta, Yodcha Olam, you should lean one hand on him. Nevertheless, Moshe leaned two because he was very generous and gave to Yeshua everything that he possibly could. So we might say smicha de behema family. We don't mean smicha of a person. We mean smicha of an animal, smicha of a korban. This is the only place where it says Yodav. Every other place it says Yodav in the single. And we learn that from the Binyan Av, that in fact it means both hands. The Gemara says of Makom Shesen from Shoy. The Mishnah had said of Makom Shesen from Shoyfin, in the same place where you do the smicha, then you should do the shchita. Take off the smicha shchita, and right after the smicha should be the shchita. So the Gemara says, my karma. What exactly does the Mishnah mean? It seems to be repetitious. If you have to do the shchita where you do the smicha, then of course it means that. Then of course it means they have to be done one right after the other. So let it just say, take off the smicha shchita, and automatically, of course, that means they have to be done in the same place. Rashi, regular Rashi, points out another meaning of the question could be that on the face of it we're saying mokum shasen kan shoftim, that can mean in the place on the animal where you do the smicha is where you do the shchita, but it's not so. We said before you don't do smicha on the front of the neck, and that's precisely where you do the shchita. So when it says Hoki Kama, what the Mishnah means is the Mokum shall send from Shreitim because Sheh taketh Smicha Shreitim. It has to be the same place because the Shvita has to be done right after the Smicha. So according to Rashi Ksavyab and regular Rashi's first explanation, the point is, why do you have to do the Smicha in the place, in the Azara, where the Shvita is going to be done? Because take off the Smicha Shvita. According to the second explanation, the vote is that one has nothing to do with the other. You do the Smicha on the head, you don't do it on the neck. On the other hand, when the Mishnah is saying the Mokum Shvita, it doesn't mean the same, it doesn't mean the particular place on the animal's body, it means the particular place in the Azara, because again, you have to do it in the Azara, because as soon as possible after that, you have to do the Shvita.